This is side one of a tape done with Mr. Louis Bossman of Green Bay, formerly of Gardner. He speaks here about religion and politics. Mr. Bossman was born in 1894. The interview took place on January 8, 1976, in Mr. Bossman's home in Green Bay. The interviewer is Linda Green. Mr. Bossman, could you tell me about the church in the community that you grew up in?
Well, I'll tell you about the little congregation that we had, you know, in the town of Gardner, see? It was called St. Joseph's Parish. And last summer, I met a priest that's teaching school at Premont Trail here. And he was interested in trying to find out just exactly what had happened to the St. Joseph Parish during that Reformation that they had in the way back in the early 19 years. See?
It was 1919.
About 1900 is when it happened. Maybe just a little before that. See, and I told him to go down to the bishop's home, that he would probably find some record there of what had happened during that time and something about the history of St. Joseph's Parish. Well, if you go back to the list of names of, and families that belonged to St. Joseph's Parish that my grandpa sent to the bishop, I think in 1878 or 18, in that neighborhood anyway, I don't have my exact date. The exact date is on that paper that he sent to the bishop. This priest was interested in finding out why it was that this only took place in St. Joseph's Parish. He didn't see why. There weren't more that left the church from St. Francis in Brussels or the St. Mary of the Snow in Namur. Well, the parish in Brussels, the St. Francis parish in Brussels, was mostly all solid Belgians. So was the church at St. at Namur. They were practically all Belgian. Now, the people in Little Sturgeon, by the list, you will find out that there was a kind of a mixture of nationalities in there.
Was that your church?
That was our church, Little Soldiers Church, yeah. Now, we had Webers in there, and we had Eichingers, and we had Krauses. Now, those people were of German descent, see? And they left the St. Joseph's Church, see? Then we had people by the name of LeViolets and Corbusier and Dury. Now, those people were Canadians. And they all left the church. And then we had a few Bohemians in there, see? We had Marsiks and Palachiks. They left the church. See? And then there were a few Irish in there. We had the Killorn. There were two families of Killorns in that parish. There was a family of Moore and a family of Rileys and a family of Farleys, Irish in descent. Now they stayed. They stayed with the Belgians in the parish. And that left just a few Belgians. There were also some Belgians that left the church. Now, all the Herlaches were formerly members of that parish. They left and they went in with the Spiritualist Church, see? And then there were people like Rubens, and my Uncle Adolph Bossman and some of the LaViolettes, you know, left the Catholic Church, left the parish, and joined the Episcopalian Church. So that's probably the reason why those people left. They were not of the of the Belgian nationality, and probably were not as strict Catholics as the Belgians were. And either they fell, you know, for what Villotte and Evreth had to offer in the way of a new religion for them.
Did you ever know Villotte yourself?
I remember Villotte. Yeah, I remember the. We never went to his services, but my father used to visit him quite often, at least once a year, because he was a kind of a tinker too. You know, he used to repair watches and so on, and clocks and that. And I remember my dad taking his watch and clock over to the parish hall there to have it repaired and cleaned and so on. See? And I also remember Evrat, you know, the spiritual director, see?
Now, what was he like?
What?
What was he like?
Well, he was on the type of Villotte, too. See?
What was that?
Probably didn't have the education that Villotte had, because Villotte was supposed to have been an ordained priest. He had a fairly good education. But Evreth didn't have any. Well, he had some education, but not the type that Villotte had, see? Now, when the spiritualists first started, they had no building to hold their services. So they held their services, you know, in their homes, see? And right across from where we lived, right across the road from where we lived, there was a family by the name of Delmont. Delmont had four or five daughters, and they had one son. And one of the daughters was married to a Delvo. And they used the home there, you know, for their services, see? And I remember seeing, you know, Evreth coming to deliver the sermon, see?
Did you ever get an idea of what went on?
Not exactly, because there really was no coherence to his lectures, understand? He talked mostly about physical conditions, understand? Like the movements of the earth, the movements of the sun and so on, the stars and so on. See? There was very little religion in there, you know. The only nice thing about the spiritualists is some of them kept, you know, in touch with their prayers, the older ones, you see. But I think the younger people in that little generation, you know, kind of fell away from prayer, see. They didn't think there was any value in prayer, see.
What was the reaction of the community to the people who followed?
Well, there was
the
very, very strong reaction. There was hatred between each other, you know. They all told stories about each other.
Do you remember any of those?
Yeah, I remember some of them, you know. There was one story that some woman, I knew who the woman was, but I'm not going to mention her name, see, mm-hmm. had gone to a funeral in the spiritualist church after the church was built, the building was built, see. And, you know, to kind of poke fun, you know, at their doings, you see. Somebody that was in that funeral home, I mean, at the funeral, said that they saw the devil, you know, in that church. And that the devil had put his arms around this woman, see, which caused her to be sick for quite a while after that, see. But now that's just stories, see. And there are all kinds of stories, you know, that they used to visit the priest's home, and they found the priest eating meat on Friday when he told his people they were not supposed to eat any meat on Friday, but he was indulging in meat. And another one that's been going around was that he made a bet that he could do something, you know, a mysterious work, a miracle of some kind, and he was supposed to show up at some home, at some spiritualist home, to perform this miracle. See, but they knew it was a fake, and so he never showed up at all. See?
Who told these stories?
Well, those stories were repeated. Though I don't remember who they were told them.
The adults in the community.
Well, those stories against the spiritualists were told by Catholics. See? You know, and then the other ones against the Catholics were told by the spiritualists. See?
Were there any conflicts between these families before the church?
Oh yeah, yeah, we were told, you know, to keep away from those people. See, it was just too bad. Because the Corbusiers had some nice people, the Debrews were nice people, understand? And they had lovely girls, but you know, we were told to keep away from those girls. See, so there were very, very few mixed marriages there between the Catholics and the spiritualists or the Episcopalians. You understand? The Episcopalians weren't so bad, but keep away from those spiritualists. See? They're possessed by the devil. That was the story. See? You know. But the nice thing about those spiritualists, as I say, one bad thing was that they forgot the prayers, but they swore not to drink. None of them used any liquor, see? And none of them ever used any profane language. See?
And liquor was
two marvelous, you know, things in their lives. See? No drinking of any liquor, and no profane language. See? Now that neighbor that we had, that Delvo, that was married to a Delmont, I don't believe all the years that we lived there, it must have been 18, 19 years, I even worked for him several summers, I never heard him use a cuss word. See?
What happened usually in the community? What, did a lot of people drink at that time?
Well, the Belgians were, they used liquor, you know. And the old spiritualists used liquor too, see. But you see, after they went into this Reformation, they stopped, see. Except the old people. Now, old man Delmont, old Joseph Delmont, you know, he had used liquor in his younger days, see. And of course, when they went over to the new religion, the girls and the son put an end to his liquor drinking, see. But he was bound and determined to have liquor. So he used to come over to my grandpa, right? Once in a while, you know. And then he used to go in the fields to find my dad, when my dad was working in the field, to have him go to the tavern and bring some liquor, see? Well, what they did, you know, the daughters would get hold of my dad, and they would formulate some kind of a goddamn hodgepodge business with red pepper and I don't know what else, understand? And then, you know, they'd give that to my dad, and my dad would bring that over to the house, see? You know, thinking that he would drink that, and thinking that that was liquor, see?
Do you remember him ever drinking that?
Yeah, I remember that, sure. But you see, it didn't suit his purpose, see? But that's all they gave him, huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happened in the schools relationship to this conflict?
What?
You were going to school at that time, right?
Well, the school wasn't too bad, you know. It was later on in years, see? You know, that things were divided, understand? When we got to be older, understand? As kids, you know, 8, 9, 10, well, even 13, 14 years old, see? Up to the time that it was our time to go to school to be, to take up the religious education, understand? Then, you know, they started dividing, see? And I think there were only 3 or 4 marriages, you know, intermarriages between the spiritualists and the Catholics. Of course, now, you know, a good many of those third generation people are going back to the Catholic Church because they're marrying into Catholic families. They still have a few members in their church, but it's being reduced right along. But now they have a woman that's the preacher that comes from Kenosha, I think. Either Kenosha or Milwaukee, see? But she talks religion, see? Something that Abras and that the man that followed Abras as their preacher was the DeWalziger, Alex DeWalziger, see? Now, they never preached religion. They never quoted any Bible of any kind, see? But this lady does, see?
What was your catechism like?
The catechism? Well, the catechism, I know, was a little book, maybe a paper-covered book with maybe 40 or 50 pages, understand? And it was the old system of education. There was a question, and then the question was answered, see? Where's God, for instance? God is everywhere, see? We were asked, where is God? Well, God is everywhere, see? We should love God with all our hearts and all our souls, see? So it was a question, and then the answer, question, and the answer. The nuns used to ask the question, and we had to give the right answer, see? And it covered the religion quite well, see? It covered all the sacraments, and an explanation of all the sacraments. And then each sacrament was followed by a series of questions and answers, see?
I understand you didn't live at home during that time.
What?
I understand that you lived somewhere else during that time.
Well, when we went to school, you see, we were asked to study our catechism during the winter at home, see? So around Christmas time, or even before Christmas time, we got a whole lot of catechisms, and then our folks and all the brothers and sisters, you know, helped us with the catechism, see? We went through the book, they'd ask the question, and we'd learn the answer, and so on, see? And then, you know, it's the same thing with our prayers. The prayers we learned at the home, see? And then when we got ready to make First Communion, First Holy Communion, we had to go to school to get some special education, see? So we went to a little school at Namur that was run by some nuns, yeah? Then we stayed away from home because from Namur to where we lived in the town of Gardner was about 11 miles. We couldn't do it, you know, every day, see? But we had an aunt that lived in St. Mary of the Snow Parish at Namur. So we stayed with her. Her and the husband, she had a family. It was two boys in the family and a daughter that I remember were about my age, see? Then we'd get there about the middle of April. It all depends when we got there. If you were real smart, you know, learning things easily, maybe wait until May, see? We were there for the month of May and then for the month of June. Then generally, in the middle of the month of June, we made the First Communion. See? So we had those 2 months or maybe 6 weeks of regular training in the parochial school. See? And it was the same thing when we confirmed. When we were confirmed, my sister and I were confirmed at the same time. Well, the two of us then, you know, rather than staying at this aunt, see, drove hard for confirmation. And for some, for a time, Sunday services, that is a Sunday Mass. You know. But then later on, when the people of St. Francis and the people of Mary of the Snow demanded Mass every Sunday, they took the Mass away from our parish. See? So all that was left then for us, the priest from Namur, we were a mission priest, so was St. Francis, see? The priest from Namur, from the St. Mary, from Mary of the Snow, used to come on a Sunday evening. And they'd have Vespers. See, Vespers is some kind of a something, you know, like the Mass, understand? Only it wasn't just exactly like it. But there was a sermon. Okay? And then after the sermon, there was always confessions. See, for people that wanted to go to confession. And then the priest would stay, you know, at different homes. See?
He did.
Yeah, he drove a horse and buggy. But you see, it was 11 miles. Okay? So then he'd have to come back the next morning. Then Monday morning, we had Mass. See? So the people that had gone to confession on the evening before could go to communion in the morning, at morning Mass on Monday. See? Yeah. But then later on, the people of St. Francis demanded two Masses. Okay? So then they abolished our church, dissolved our parish, and transferred the property, was transferred to St. Francis. It is the land, there was a lot there of 5 acres, and the building was transferred to St. Francis. And some of the people, most of the people went to St. Francis, but some, you know, went to the parish in Sturgeon Bay at Corpus Christi Church there, on the Sawyer side, see? In fact, I have one brother that went to Sturgeon Bay, see? My brother and the mother that lived on the farm most of their lives remained with St. Francis. That's where they're buried. They're buried in St. Francis Church. And my dad and my granddad and grandma and a brother are buried in the old St. Joseph Cemetery, which is on a lot right next to the old Gardner Town Hall. The cemetery is kept up, but there are only a few markers on that. A lot of these old people were buried there years ago, and a lot of Indians were buried in there, have no markers at all. They had previously had markers made of wooden crosses, you know.
The Indians?
But, you see, that's all gone. Mm-hmm. And I have an uncle that is buried there, a great uncle that is buried there. But he has no marker either. He died quite young. His wife, Aunt Catherine, you know, lived quite old. I must have been 17, 18 years old when Aunt Catherine died. You know, we'd ask her, well, where is your husband buried? Well, she said, he's buried under the tree there. Well, the tree is gone, you know. I said, is there any record of that at all? Well, she said, I don't know. She always referred to him as mon Paul, meaning my Paul. See? Well, we never got a second name at all. We never knew who he was, you know. We never knew who Paul was, too. So when I made a trip to Belgium some time ago, you know, I went in the church there, because she was married in Belgium with this Paul, see? And I found a record there that his name was Leopold, the martyr, the marty. They had a marriage license in that church.
What were the funerals like at that time?
Oh, the funerals were very... There was nothing to a funeral, you know. I remember my grandpa and my dad dying, and all they had was a black casket, see? With a cover over the top, and they had a glass, you know, over the body, over half of the body. And the body stayed home, and my grandpa's body stayed home. The evening that he died, there was a man there by the name of Pelletier that prepared the body for funeral. That is, cleaned him up, you know, and shaved him and put on his clothes. And then they put the body on the slab so it would cool off and so on. And then the next day they went to Sturgeon Bay to get a coffin, and just brought back a black coffin and a wooden rough box. See? Well, the coffin came into the house, and the body was placed into the coffin. See, and then the rough box was taken to the cemetery and placed in the grave.
Did the relatives come around at that time?
Well, you know, when Grandpa died, there were about three or four families there. The neighbors were there the night that he died. See, and then and they always had a wake all night. See. They stayed up all night. Mm-hmm.
What would they do at that time?
Huh?
What would they do at that time?
Well, they'd just visit. Okay? Sometimes they would, well, not sometimes, but they would say the rosary or something, an old prayer. And all there was alongside of that casket, or that coffin, was one candle, a lighted candle, see? It was kept burning all the time that the body was there, see? And then when the day of the funeral came for Grandpa, it was in January, and we had a January thaw, see? And they didn't know what to do, whether they should transfer the body with a wagon, because that's all they had in those days, no lumber wagon, team of horses, or whether they should use a sleigh, see? They decided that it would be easier to use the sleigh. It would be a smoother ride on a rough wagon, see? And Uncle Eli, my mother's brother, was fishing at the time for La Violet. And La Violet had a brand new sled and a bay team of horses. And so he was the one that drove the corpse, you know, from the home to the church, see? Then they had the services, that's all they had there. They sang the Mass in Latin, of course, at that time, you know. Prayers were in French. And then what? Another thing they always did, you know, when the body got into the church, they'd always open the casket, see? So you could view the body as it was, see? And then after the services, they would take the body to the cemetery, and there again, when they placed the casket over the grave, uh-huh, they would open up the cover again, so you could have a last view at the body, see? You know? And then they had ropes, you know, to let the casket down, see? Then when the casket was down in the rough box, they put the cover on and then cover it up with dirt. Huh? And there was always a mound there, you know. You know, so that when the body decayed and the box decayed, see, the thing would sink in, see. Today they don't have that, you know. Today they have these concrete vaults. And as soon as there's no settling there at all there, see? The vault remains, you know, as it is for I don't know how many years. And so today they level that off the day of the funeral, see? Just leveled off. You know? Good many places the grass is put on, see? But not in these old days. See? And the funeral was pretty much the same when my dad died. Dad died in the hospital in Sturgeon Bay, and the body was taken from Sturgeon Bay Hospital, from the morgue there in Sturgeon Bay, by a team of horses, and kind of an ambulance-like, but the body was hauled during the night. I don't know why. See? When we got up in the morning, the body was there. See? But the body had come to the house during the night, see? And it was the same thing there, you know. Just the black coffin, black casket with one candle. Uh-huh. Neighbors were there visiting. Uh-huh. Funeral was just like my grandpa, see? only that it was a little bit more sophisticated. The morgue man from Sturgeon Bay came with his team of horses and the ambulance, rather than have an ordinary wagon, you know, haul the body to the church and to the cemetery. See? So it was a little bit up to date. Now, these horses, you know, had kind of a net on them. Black net they had on horses.
Yeah.
Black net, yeah. Well, that was a sign of mourning, see? And these nets, you know, had great big tassels hanging down, almost down to the ground from the horses. Yeah. And it was always a custom among the people, you know, when anybody died, everybody was dressed in dark. See? If the women didn't have any dark dresses during the time that the body was in the home, they'd get together and sew up things. See? And everybody, all the relation, you know, wore a piece of crepe. You know what crepe is, don't you? It's kind of a dark old piece of cloth made into little bouquets or something, little bushes, you know, and they used to wear that on their hats, see, as a sign of mourning. See?
And they'd be black?
Well, it wasn't quite black, no, it was kind of a grayish material. But it symbolized, you know, mourning. See? And as a rule, when my grandpa died, I remember that we mourned a whole year. See?
What did that involve?
My grandpa died of?
You say you mourned a whole year.
Yeah.
What did that mean, that you wore black?
That means that we didn't go anywhere. We didn't go to any dances or any social doings of any kind. See? That was the mourning. See? And it was the same thing when my dad died. In fact, after my dad died, I think it was over a year before we went to any doing. See? So I was 14 when he died, and it was almost 16 or 17 before I ever went to any dances. Yeah, because we mourned more than a year after Dad died. That was in respect to the dead, you know. And then, of course, at the services, they had what they call a special offering, where people were...